It could be argued that Illinois' 12th congressional district race is the most compelling and exciting contest of its kind in the country. It features two strong candidates with high name recognition and a long record of public service. Democrat Brendan Kelly believes he's the candidate to bring the district back into the Democratic column. The St. Clair County State's Attorney joins us on the latest edition of Politically Speaking to talk about his congressional contest and how he stacks up against Congressman Mike Bost. Let's hit the music.
This is the Politically Speaking podcast, a candid conversation with the Show Me State's biggest political newsmakers.
I'm Jason Rosenbaum.
And I'm Joe Manis.
Elections should be about your accomplishments. What have you done to qualify you for the position, and why are you qualified to run?
I'm going to push back on these regulators.
I'm doing this for the people.
I was encouraged along the way, not just by my family, but by a lot of teachers and professors, and knew when I was in college that I would run for office someday.
We're very excited about the prospect of having some more free market solutions.
Even though after the conversation, I still might not agree.
We want our listeners to get a real sense of what drives these people.
They're actually people with a story to tell.
And welcome to Politically Speaking. I'm your host, Jason Rosenbaum, a reporter with St. Louis Public Radio. I'm flying solo today, and our special guest,
Brendan Kelly.
He is the Democratic nominee in the 12th Congressional District of Illinois. You also have another political elected service job as well.
Yes, sir. I'm the state's attorney in St. Clair County.
I think this is one of the most exciting congressional races in the entire country. I'm very pleased that both you and Congressman Bost have committed to be on the show so we can talk about the issues and this campaign. Before we get into both of those things, I want you to tell us a little bit about yourself,
sure,
kind of about your personal and professional background.
Well, my family came to Southern Illinois over 30 years ago because of Scott Air Force Base. We have a long family history of military service and public service, and my mother and father worked for the Department of Defense. So like many people in the Metro East, our roots are in Scott Air Force Base. That's what brought us to Southern Illinois. It's a big, important part of the district. And I went to grade school here, went to high school here, and then after high school, I got a ROTC scholarship, Navy ROTC scholarship, attended the University of Notre Dame. That's how I was able to afford the ridiculous tuition costs of Notre Dame, thanks to Uncle Sam. And then after graduating, I got commissioned and served in the United States Navy all over the world, the Middle East. The Navy took me everywhere, basically.
It's interesting because a lot of candidates on both sides have, in this particular district, have had military backgrounds. I know that in 2012, both the Republican and Democratic nominee had military backgrounds.
Sure.
And in 2014 as well. It just seems like, is there just a lot of military history throughout the 12th District, or is it Scott Air Force Base that typically attracts
I think some people? Of it's Scott. I think everybody has different stories about, you know, what type of the service they may or may not have had, but it's certainly a part of my family's history, and I think it's a very common experience for people in district. My wife, she came to this area about the same time I did, over 30 years ago, also because of Scott Air Force Base, because her father was in the Air Force. And he was a chief master sergeant in the Air Force. And my sister just got out of the Navy. My brother-in-law is still in the Navy. I have a brother-in-law who was a Marine. I've got a uncle who was in the Army. My grandfather and my granduncle were in the Army. I think we've got every branch covered but the Coast Guard at this point. But we all, who knows? Maybe we got a cousin that's in the Coast Guard. I just don't know about it. It's a pretty common experience.
There's always time. So when did you first decide that you wanted to run for elected office?
Well, you know, it's not something that you necessarily think about that you're planning out. In my case, the first thing I ever ran for was school board. My local school, where my kids were attending and where I had actually attended, where my wife and I went to grade school, where we met each other in the sixth grade, they had kind of a rough go in terms of difficult negotiation, and the community was a little bit divided. It was a rough contract negotiation, and I had both teachers and some people from the community said, "Hey, why don't you run for school board? And maybe, you know, that your heart is with this this school and with this community." And actually, I think they asked my wife first, and she said, "You should ask him." And so I wound up running for school board, and wound up being the top vote getter. And it was a really great experience, very positive experience. And we did some good things. And then eventually, as an assistant state's attorney, I eventually found my way to being the state's attorney. So now run for election twice for that position, and I've been the elected county prosecutor in the largest county in the 12th congressional district for about 8 years now. So that's been an amazing experience, and I think it's an important part of the American experience, important part of being a good citizen, is sometimes being willing to step up and show a little courage, be willing to take criticism, be willing to listen to people, and get involved in your democracy. And not everybody has to be a candidate, but when folks say, hey, we think you got some skills and you're a good leader, why don't you give this a try? I think you kind of owe it to your fellow citizens to listen to that and step up and do what you can do to help. And I've enjoyed it. I really like going out and engaging with people. I think if you're going to be involved in public service, you're going to be involved in politics, you got to like people. And I love people, and I really enjoy talking to them and hearing what's going on with them and trying to find ways to help each other.
And that was going to be my next question. So, you know, the 12th congressional district used to be Democratic for 40 and 50 years. And
maybe longer.
since Abraham Lincoln was in office. And, you know, when the seat became vacant in 2012, I was surprised. It was actually vacant twice. There was a Democratic nominee who was elected in a primary and he had to bow out. And Congressman Enyart eventually became the nominee and the congressman. I was surprised that there weren't more Democrats interested in the seat. They're really, including possibly yourself or any of the other state legislators. So my question is, why have you decided to run for Congress, and why didn't you make this leap earlier?
Well, I tell you, I was recruited. I was asked, you know, at that time if I would consider doing it. And I had to, really have a moment and discern what's the right thing for my family. And at that time, my son, who is now in college, he was younger at an important stage in his life. My youngest son was much, much younger. And it just didn't feel like the right thing to do. And so I think it's important to listen to your gut when you're making those important decisions and even pray about it and seek some guidance from someone who might have a bit different perspective. And it just didn't seem like the right thing to do at that time. And I think there's never a good time. There really is never a good time to do something like this, because it is a tremendous undertaking. It impacts not just the candidate, but the family. Everybody who's helping you. It is a major, major undertaking. But my feeling that was different this time than before was just a sense that the country is very, very divided. And these divisions that we have in the country are hurting places like Southern Illinois perhaps more than anywhere. And I felt obligated to step forward and be a candidate to try to bridge that divide, to try to fight the fights that need to be fought, and really find a way to be a part of a solution rather than part of the problem, rather than part of the ugliness that we see on a regular basis. I just think this straight party line approach on either side has not been healthy for the country. It has not been healthy, particularly for places like Southern Illinois. And that's why I felt like, given my background in the military, my background as a prosecutor, where my approach has been to try to solve problems, try to work with people, try to get things done, regardless of party, regardless of who came up with the idea, regardless of what the ideology may be, you know, what is best for people here. And I've done that as someone who served in the military. I've done that as a prosecutor. You know, you've got to work with the community. You got to work with the police. You got to work with some very groups that often have different points of view. And I think we've done some good things with that. I've been able to do that. And so I think you have to have that kind of approach where you show a little courage and you step out of the typical tit for tat fights and reach across the aisle and reach across even within your own party and people aren't even involved in politics, and try a way to help the country first. And so that's what I'm doing.
So let's talk about that.
Yeah.
I want to get a sense of how you're different from some of the other people in the party. I've seen your ads about how you're not going to vote for Nancy Pelosi as possibly speaker. But first of all, why did you take that posture? Because as someone who follows federal politics somewhat closely, if the Democrats take the majority, a lot of the reason for that will be because of Nancy Pelosi and the money and the effort that she put in to flip seats like the 12th congressional district. So I'm curious why you decided to take that stance, given her involvement in that.
Yeah, you know, I think it's not about one person. It's about the fact that we need new leaders. We need new leaders in both parties. I think we've kind of binge-watched this series with the same cast of characters for the past 20 years, and it's time for something new. I think we're going to have to break the logjam. And the dialogue has broken down. The way the democracy, way democracy is supposed to work, is broken down. And I think we're just going to have new leaders, and it's certainly not just directed at her. But what the other side will do is they'll make it about personalities versus personalities. And I think it needs to be made clear about where I stand, and where I stand is not with loyalty to some particular group or some particular personality, but loyal to what's first and foremost most important to Southern Illinois, and being able to work with anybody, regardless of party, on issues that may be helpful to Southern Illinois. So I think it's the idea that we don't have other people that can step forward and be able to lead, I think, is not a healthy one for our democracy in either party. You have to have a continuously develop new leaders. And I think that's why we have some of the challenges that we have in this country, is it's just the same old folks arguing back and forth. And so that's why it was important to me to be very clear, because I'm sure the other side will try to paint a picture that is just not accurate. That's what they're going to do. It's not a surprise. And
yeah, they might say, say the DCCC gets involved in your race. They may say, well, you're benefiting from Nancy Pelosi's money, or she's helped fundraise for you. I'm just kind of giving the preemptive response, which you've heard before.
It's not just that they will say, they do say that.
They
have said that. So that's why it's important to be clear with the people and be clear with the public up front about where you stand and where your priorities are. And not allow it to just devolve into this this tit for tat about certain personalities, but remain focused on Southern Illinois. So I'm just not going to let those guys land those easy lazy punches. We're going to fight and focus on the things that are important here that people are talking about. People are not talking about the tweet of the day or the controversy of the day. It is just not what people are focused on. In Southern Illinois, they have very real concerns about their own lives and the fact that the policies in D.C. are not producing results for their life. And so that's why, it's important to make sure that you don't let the other side set a trap for you and that you don't take their bait, and that you focus on what's most important to people in this district and not fall into the same old argument, the same old tit for tat that we have, that people are just disgusted with. They get tired of it. And that just feeds the divide. And a lot of it is driven by money. And I think that's beyond just, positions on certain issues. I think the fundamental disagreement that I have with my opponent is just his position on Citizens United and the money that's coming into politics. Our system has been corrupted. Let's just be frank about it. The influence of money on our political process has turned our democracy into something that is not a democracy. It is an elite few, a few people at the top who are consolidating political and economic power in the hands of fewer and fewer people, and they're doing that deliberately, and they have a philosophy that is just, in my opinion, and I think in the opinion of many people in Southern Illinois, at odds with the things that would be helpful to people in Southern Illinois. And I think that's where we have just a fundamental disagreement about the future of our democracy. All these issues that we have, whether it's on immigration, or whether it's on economic policy, or whether or not it's on foreign policy now as well, we're not solving the problems and coming up with good, sound policy and have a plan to move forward that will help the country and help Southern Illinois because of the money in politics that feeds this divide and drives the decision makers and drives the policy influencers into extremes and makes it almost impossible to be able to reach some common solutions and focus on the common good. Mm-hmm. And to me, that is the biggest threat to our democracy. And we have to get enough people in Congress that are going to vote to not just pass a constitutional amendment, which is what we have to do to overturn Citizens United and end Citizens United, but we also have to take some steps to make the process more transparent than it is now.
Yeah, because it's a mess. Let's just be candid.
Yeah.
You know, we had a situation in Missouri where there were no campaign donation limits for a while, and people were upset about that. But for the most part, you could see where the money was going. Now that there's campaign donation limits in Missouri, similar to the federal level, you see the rise of these outside groups that can take unlimited amounts of money. Some of them, you know, don't have to disclose their donors if they're 501c4s. It's been a disaster in Missouri, and it's been a disaster federally because the money has become more opaque and more separated from the candidates, which I'm sure that we're going to see in this
race
too.
No, we are, and let's be honest about it. There's going to be money coming in to support my opponent that we won't know where it's even coming from. There will also be money coming in to support me, and we don't know where it's coming from, and it's unaccounted for. We don't know who's influencing us, and in a democracy, the essence of a democracy at the end of the day is that there's transparency, and that the people can make informed decisions because they got all the facts, they got all the information. It's an open, honest form of government. We don't have that right now. Because the amount of money, the dark money that can come in, foreign money that can come in, based on the current very loose regulations that we have, it warps our democracy, and it drives people to vote in a way that may not be in their best interest because they're being influenced and pounded over and over and over again with this messaging that is funded by people that don't have their best interest in mind. And it's a corrupt process. Now, look, I'm doing very well in terms of fundraising, but our fundraising is coming from mostly small donors, and that gives me great encouragement that there is the power of the people can counter that. But long term, the trend that would deteriorate the quality of our democracy that we're seeing right now is in large part because of the unlimited amount of dark and foreign money that's influencing our elections.
I want to talk about trade. Yeah. I think trade might be one of the most important issues in your district.
It is, yeah.
It's not only because of the Granite City steel mill, but it's also because of the retaliatory tariffs could be affecting farms in southern Illinois. Yeah. So I've looked at the reactions of people like Senator Blunt and Senator McCaskill compared to Senator Durbin and Senator Duckworth to the tariffs. Both Missouri senators are very much opposed to the tariffs because of their effects on agriculture.
Sure.
The Illinois senators are a little bit more measured in their response because they may end up benefiting manufacturing places like in Granite City and other parts of southern Illinois. I'm interested to hear your take on this because it doesn't seem like this is a party line issue and the reactions to it are party line.
I don't think it is. And I think, frankly, there have been decision makers and influencers in both parties over the past 20 or 30 years that have driven our trade policy to be all about helping the Bank of America rather than the people of America. It's a very top-down approach to trade that has in some ways benefited certain sectors of the economy, but really hurt the heartland, really hurt places like southern Illinois. And it's deeper than just one issue. It's deeper than just the issue of the steel tariffs and the aluminum tariffs that were, I think, appropriately applied because of the national security concerns that are there. I believe, as someone who served in the military and has some understanding of what's going on in the world and how important our role in the world is, that we have to have a strong domestic steel industry, because in the event of a hot war between us and North Korea or Iran or God forbid, some kind of confrontation with China, we have to have the steel we need for our ships, the aluminum we need for our missiles. And I certainly don't think China's going to lend that to us in the event that we're in some type of conflict. So we have to confront those that are cheating and violating the trade rules. And I think that was an appropriate step. I do not think it is wise to pick a fight with Canada, to pick a fight with the EU, to pick a fight with our allies in the midst of us trying to focus on the violations of China. I think China has broken the rules. I think they are notorious cheaters, And there has been a reckoning that's been coming for probably, you know, 10 or 15 years after they joined the World Trade Organization, where there has to be an accounting for the fact that they're violating the rules. We have to do that. And again, I think that should transcend party. But I think the strategy of just willy-nilly fighting with everybody is not smart. We have to focus on the bad actors, and that in that case is China. But even deeper than that, one case involving China involving steel and aluminum, it's just this sense that trade policy and the decision makers that impact trade are very disconnected from everyday people, very, very disconnected from your person who's living their life in Southern Illinois, trying to find a job, and perhaps reliant on a job that is being impacted by trade negatively or even positively. The process has become so disconnected from the people that it is supposed to serve, and that's sort of very counter to what the essence of a democracy is. Our trade policy has become something that's decided by a few elite folks rather than thinking about what's most important and what's going to help most people. And that's why I think that you're going to continue to see things like Brexit, those votes. You're going to continue to see elections like you had in 2016 until we get at this fundamental issue of making sure that our trade policy helps people, and that is it is benefiting people, not just a few bankers, not just a few lawyers, but people here in places like Southern Illinois. When you support things like fast-track trade policy, that is something that is a policy position which I just fundamentally disagree with, because it is part of why people are so angry, why people are so frustrated with the way our trade policy is created. I think Congress should not approve fast track trade authority, because they need to make the decision. As a member of Congress, I want to be involved in the process of trade negotiations. I want to be involved in the process of approving those trade agreements, because I want to make sure they're helping my people. I want to make sure that they're helping Southern Illinois. If you just hand it off to some trade representative or hand it off to the executive branch, then you are not doing your job. And that is why we have these trade agreements, which have no connection whatsoever to the reality on the ground. And then you see this violent reaction, both politically and economically, to these bad trade agreements, which is not good for anybody either. And you have this whiplash between the manufacturing and your agricultural industry that is negatively impacted by it. So I think the fundamental issue of trade is much deeper than just one particular sector. We have to change how we are doing our trade policy for the long term. We have to do it smartly. We have to do it wisely. And it has to be something that is done in a bipartisan way. And I think that's why, you know, the steel workers endorse me. Mm-hmm. It's great to see those jobs back. And I totally agree with that. That's good to have those jobs back in Granite City. But the union, the steelworkers, they endorse me because they know that the problems are much deeper than just with this one circumstance. And they were, frankly, very frustrated to see Canadian steelworkers being harmed, because they represent them too.
Yeah, that's what I heard
too. It's a complicated situation. So now we see that the steelworkers are considering doing a strike, because the steel industry is doing really, really well. They're raking in the dough now, but the few people running the company apparently are not at this point willing to share the benefits of that. So they talk about how important the steel workers are to them, but when it comes to paying for their health insurance and proper wages and having protections at the job, they're not willing to make some concessions. So it's a complicated issue, and I think that we have to tackle these problems in a way that gets at the deeper issues.
So foreign policy, you know, you served in the military, and I feel like the biggest responsibility of a congressperson is to decide, God forbid, whether to declare war or send military into harm's way. I'd like to hear your general philosophy on how President Trump is handling different foreign policy crises, and how you would, as somebody who may be tasked to ratify one of his decisions, what you're going to look at. And you know, we can also use this opportunity to talk about how you would want to care for veterans as well, because I know that that's probably something both you and Congressman Boss care about?
Yeah,
so it's a vague question, but I think it's probably it's a pretty important one.
Well, you know, I will say the issue of foreign policy comes up so rarely on the campaign trail.
Really?
It is not something that people talk about very often.
Why do you think that is?
Because I think right now the biggest challenges that the country is facing are inward challenges, are domestic issues. I think that, look, if we want to talk about foreign policy, let's do that. Over the past 20 or 30 years, we have not really had a consistent foreign policy. And that's a big problem. The way we were able to defeat fascism, the way we were able to defeat communism and defeat the Soviet Union was by having a strong, bipartisan, consistent foreign policy that both sides agreed on. Sure, there'd be some slight disagreements around the edges, but there were fundamental things we agreed on. And that has not been the case over the past 20 years or so. It's really devolved into a set of policies on either side that are not in agreement, and there's not even consistency among both parties about what our role in the world should be. And I think that, again, we need to see Congress not be so lazy and so averse to taking on those difficult discussions, because they are very important. They are very important. But I think the problem is we've got so many people that are in Congress now that the hardest thing they've ever done is run for office. And that's the thing that's most important to them, is just get reelected. You don't have enough people that are in office right now that have made tough decisions, have had to be in very difficult circumstances. You know, the hardest thing I've ever done has been some of the decisions I've had to make as state's attorney, and those are very, very difficult things. It's a lot of work running for Congress, but it's not the hardest thing I've ever done. And I think there's too many people that are not thinking about what's best for the country; they're just thinking about the next election. I think you see that reflected in the lack of our consistent foreign policy. So that the authority for our foreign policy needs to come back to the Congress. It needs to be vested primarily in the Congress again, so we can develop a national consensus about what our role in the world is going to be. Beyond that, and getting back to the issues that are important here at home, is the concern I have about the VA and the Veterans Administration,
which has been a long running concern for decades.
It has. Look, there's some great people at the VA that work very hard, that care very much about veterans, and there's a lot of veterans in the VA have committed themselves their whole lives to serving our veterans. But I think that we still have some deep fundamental problems. There's been some incremental bipartisan progress on that. But the fundamental issue that I'm most concerned about with the VA is this push to privatize everything in the VA, to turn over the health care of our veterans to insurance companies. And I think that's a very dangerous thing. And I think that is driven by a philosophy that the other side has, which is all about privatize everything. Just give everything over to corporations and businesses and turn everything into a for-profit industry. Mm-hmm. And then suddenly it will magically be better. Well, we know that that's not what really happens. But, you know, you look at people who have Medicare or they have health care covered by the VA compared to how they feel about the coverage they have with insurance companies and the health care they get through insurance companies. The quality of care that people get is much better through Medicare, and the sense of satisfaction that people have is better through the VA. So I fundamentally disagree with this idea of privatizing the VA and putting the health care of our veterans into the hands of insurance companies. I think that's a bad trend. Mm-hmm. I also think we see a culture in D.C. Where you have the secretary of the VA, where he was, you know, flying around, going to Wimbledon, and you know, using his government position to benefit himself in some ways. I think there's not enough of an outcry about that. Mm-hmm. You look at Ben Carson, who is the secretary of HUD, while public housing is going to hell in Cairo and in East St. Louis, he's ordering, you know, fancy tables for his office. That is a big problem, and Congress is not providing the aggressive oversight that it needs to over those type of that type of culture, which is again not about service, it's not about putting the country first, it's not about helping people in Southern Illinois, it's about just this the whole swamp.
Well, that gets me into my next question about your view of how President Trump is doing, because I saw an ad that the DCCC was doing in the 6th congressional district in suburban Chicago, where they were derisively tying Peter Roskam to the president.
Yeah.
I think that if the DCCC did that to Congressman Bost in your district, that would probably help Congressman Bost, because the president has some popularity here. But there's obviously a lot of people on both sides who are concerned with his leadership style right now and concerned about the stability of the country. So I'd be interested to hear your take on that.
I think in this district, it's a bit of a coin toss on that issue. And I think, again, what I hear, if I'm listening to the people I'm trying to serve, that is not the focus of their daily life. There are some people that agree with what the president's doing on this issue or that issue, some people that strongly disagree with the president on this issue or that issue, but they're not focused on that. They are primarily focused on what is a concern to them. They're looking at the cost of their health care going up. They look at the cost of their prescriptions going up. They look at the cost of education is going up. They look at the cost of gas that's going up.
Opioid abuse.
That's a big issue. That's a big issue. They're very concerned about their friends and their family who are dying of opioid overdoses. They're looking at the cost of their cable bill. And you know, there's some places in Southern Illinois where you can't even get Wi-Fi. You can't get a signal, and have access to the worldwide web in a way that kids in China or kids in Africa do. So they are primarily focused on those things. And if people ask me about the president, if there's something that the president's doing right, I'll work with him on it. If it's something that will help Southern Illinois, I'll work with him on it. If there's something he's doing wrong, then you got to fight him on it. And, mm-hmm. and it's not real complicated. Frankly, that's what a member of Congress is supposed to do. Congress is supposed to be a check and a balance on the executive, whether it's a Democrat president or whether it's a Republican president. That's the role of the Congress. Congress has abdicated its role, and it's done that, frankly, for the past 20 years. They haven't done a good job of oversight on either Republican or Democratic administrations. Mm-hmm. So, I think we tend to focus, again, on the controversy of the day, and these things are serious. And you do need sober, thoughtful people in office to deal with these very, very serious issues. But we also have to get at the fundamental concerns that people have here in this district, like those issues, like the issue of opioid overdoses. And that's something that I've been involved in very much over the past 5 years as a prosecutor and as someone working with law enforcement, seeing the number of overdoses that we have that keep rising. And we are not headed in the right direction. We have a long, long way to go on that issue. And I think we have to have, if you're cutting people's health care, that's going to make the opioid issue worse. And I think that's where I fundamentally disagree with my opponent on his position in terms of the constant votes that he's taken, which undermine people's access to health care. That makes the opioid crisis worse. And then it falls on families. It falls on law enforcement. And it just makes the problem more and more difficult. And I think the other again, it gets back to the thing you and I were talking before about getting the money out of politics. Mm-hmm. If you look at how the opioid crisis started, it started largely with the overprescription of opioids like oxycodone, hydrocodone, Percocet that the pharmaceutical companies have made billions off of. And I think they have still not been held to account. They still have not been held to account. Now, I was the first prosecutor in Illinois to sue some of the pharmaceutical companies and take them on for that role and try to make them be held accountable for their role in that and make them be part of the solution. They're still not part of the solution. Right now, they're still part of the problem. They're still making a lot of money off of the overprescription of things like oxycodone and hydrocodone. The county in Southern Illinois had 280,000 people. In 2015, over 9 million individual oxycodone and hydrocodone pills were prescribed just into that one county. And the policymakers, the people that are in power now, have not reined in the influence of the pharmaceutical industry. They won't make them negotiate on drug prices. They also have not reined in their role in the impact that they've had on the opioid crisis. And it's because of the money. That's because of the money. One of the companies that I've sued and we're taking to court, along with many other Republican attorney generals and Republican prosecutors, one of the companies that we are taking on is a company that's given quite a bit of money to my opponent. Mm. And that shows the problem. That shows why we still have a long way to go on the opioid crisis because of their influence on the political process.
We only have a couple minutes left,
sure.
But I do want to talk about this race, which, sure. Again, I said I think is one of the most exciting races in the entire country. Yeah. Before I ask this question, in the early stages of this election season, a lot of focus on the 6th district and suburban district.
Sure.
Not a lot of focus on this one, even though this district is historically Democratic. And both you and Congressman Boss, I would say, are very high-quality opponents. Were you a little jealous of the 6th district that you weren't getting that attention right away? I mean, you clearly are now.
But... Well, I don't know. We've been given a lot of attention.
Yeah.
Maybe in Chicago, they're paying a lot of attention.
Well, Chicago gets an outside.
Sure.
Some people from Chicago don't even think this part of the state exists. But
I think we're getting a lot of attention. And I mean, you know, it's been covered by the USA Today. It's been covered by the New York Times, by the Washington Post, by, you know, NBC, CNN, Fox News. I mean, you know, it's going to be a while. One. This is a genuine toss-up race. This was rated as a strong Republican district a year ago, and now even Fox News has this as a toss-up.
And
so
this is the reason
it's going to be a fight.
Yeah, this is the reason I think it's going to be competitive.
Yeah.
I think you have high name recognition. You have a long record that you can tout. But to Congressman Boss credit, he's a tenacious campaigner. He has high name recognition.
That's what his ad says.
He I didn't even know. I didn't see that ad.
Yeah.
And he defeated an incumbent back in 2014.
Sure.
And, you know, I would not sleep on him as an opponent. What do you think it's going to take to bring this district back? Is it just going to be hard work? Do you think the governor's race could have an effect, given that Rauner's popularity is in the toilet right now?
Sure.
What do you think it's going to take?
I think he's got to run whatever race he thinks is appropriate, and I'm going to run my race. And we are fighting very, very hard. I do think it's going to be a fight the whole way. I don't think there's going to be some magical wave one way or the other. This is a district we're about where Connor Lamb was at this point in Pennsylvania. And if you look at that district and how you build a win in a district that went very strongly for Trump, that's a good model for us. And but in the end, it's mostly about focusing on the concerns of Southern Illinois and then listening to people and responding to their issues and really trying not to be in the same old party line. I think the other side, they have kind of a playbook that they're going to run that they think works elsewhere. And we're going to run something, and we're doing something that's focused on people here in Southern Illinois. And I think that's the path to victory for us. But you're right. It's going to be a hell of a fight all the way to the finish. I have no delusions. I don't underestimate my opponent. I think others in the past perhaps have. But we're going to fight all the way, and I like where we are because of the response we're getting from people in the district. We got volunteers coming into our offices. We got 3 offices open now. We got people walking in all day, every day. Little ladies who've never been involved in politics before coming in to make calls for us. College kids that have never been involved in anything before coming in to knock on doors for us. The amount of support we have from organized labor is tremendous. The resources, all the guys that were over here working on Right to Work, they're going to come over and help us. So,
are you worried, though, because he's touted himself as pro-labor, too, that it may be split? As far as the support that goes.
No, because I think if you really look at the record, it's one thing to say you're for labor, then it's another thing to look at how you actually, you know, are on the on those positions and where you stand. And I think, unfortunately, he's associated with himself with some groups like the Republican Study Committee, which are advocating things like a national right to work, advocating for getting rid of Davis-Bacon, advocating banning and disbanding the National Labor Relations Board. If you're for labor, that's not something you should be associated with. And so I feel really good about the endorsements we've got from the AFL-CIO, from the steelworkers, from AFSCME, from SEIU, from the United Food and Commercial Workers. It's a long list of folks from organized labor, and I'm very, very grateful to have their support, because I think this is not a time where you can kind of dabbling a little bit on those issues. You've got to be very clear about where you stand on this, because to me, organized labor is fundamental to our middle class, and it is fundamental to the reason the country even exists. You have to have a strong middle class, and without strong organized labor, the middle class is going to continue to deteriorate. And if you look at the wages, the fact that the stock market's going way up but wages aren't, it's because of these consistent attacks by the Republican Party against organized labor. And I think there's a very clear difference.
Well, we're very grateful that you were able to come and talk about these issues in the campaign. As I mentioned before, Congressman Bost is scheduled to be on the show later this month, so he'll get his opportunity to lay out his case. For all of our stories, stlpublicradio.org. Follow me on Twitter at Jay Rosenbaum. How would people follow you on Twitter or any other parts of the World Wide Web? And how would they learn more about your campaign?
Brendan for Southern Illinois. Or they go to Facebook, Brendan Kelly for Congress. We're on all the social media platforms now. That's the way it is. That's what you got to do.
Are you on MySpace?
I don't think so.
I think MySpace is defunct.
I don't
right
think
now.
That even exists anymore. I don't think I've heard those words in like 5 years.
Well, I'm glad that I broke that streak. And on that note, thank you very much. So long.
All right, thanks.